This is Carol Steckler at 11 o'clock at KLOILP, Lopez Island, Washington, 102.9 FM, Lopez Community Radio. And as I said, it's 11 o'clock on Thursday morning, and guess what we're going to do? We're going to talk trash again. And today I have in the studio Sandy Bishop, who is on the managing board of the Lopez Solid Waste District. And she was one of three original persons who explored the possibilities for Lopez Island to take charge of their own solid waste. So she has a deep story in this issue, both about the mechanics of how it came to be, but also other issues about how recycling affects us in our daily lives psychologically, and I'm really looking forward to, she's really immersed herself in this issue for a lot of years and has a lot of insight into many of the reasons why it's so satisfying, as you've heard every single guest on this show say, why it's so satisfying to be a part of a solid waste plan that says reduce, not what's the word? Something waste. I can't even think of it, Sandy. Zero waste. That's a word. Zero. I couldn't think of. So, but let's. I'm going to introduce Sandy in a minute, and let's give a listen to Pete Seeger with our theme song, "Garbage."
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. He leaves the bone and gristle, and he never eats the skin. The busboy comes and takes it, with a cough contaminates it. He puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday, carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage, 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 garbage.
Okay, and good morning, Sandy.
Hey, good morning, Carol. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, well, thanks for being here. I know you have a really busy schedule. So tell me, how did you get started in this business of trash?
Well, I think you might remember, but I think it was back in 1994 when Neil and Ona, Rhea was our county commissioner at that point, and Neil especially had this idea that we should have a community nonprofit recycling program. And so it was John Evans, Tom Starr, and Rhea as our representatives at that point. And let's see, Ron Lowen was public works director. Mm-hmm. Then there was Ed Sturr, yep, as Neil's boss. So he was our solid waste manager at, uh-huh, that point for the entire county. And anyway, Neil had this concept of a community nonprofit recycling. And it would be a nonprofit owning that part of the business, and garbage would be separated out. So we had planned to do that and had everything set up. And at the last moment, it was really derailed. And it was derailed primarily for political reasons.
Local political reasons?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everything at this level is local because we are such a small entity. I think outside of little old Lopez and San Juan County, people don't really care that much. Because whereas there's big money in garbage, there's not necessarily big money anywhere around our system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea was to separate those two components. And that was, as I said, about, yeah, I think it was somewhere between 1994 and 1996. Mm-hmm. And as I said, it was derailed primarily through local politics. And this time when we started talking about, you know, having local control, one of the first things I did is I called some of the people that were pretty instrumental in derailing the whole process years back. Mm-hmm. So that would be almost, you know, somewhere around 18 to 20 years.
And are these local
years.
Lopez people, or is this
just in the county?
In the county,
yeah,
that's what I
in
thought.
In the county.
Yeah.
Anyway, the first question I had was, well, what are you planning to do in response to our drive to have local control just over Lopez? And they said absolutely nothing. The economics have changed. Lopez is rather insignificant to us at this point. At the time that you suggested it before, we had taken out a very large loan. We had an economic stake, and we felt threatened by what you all were trying to do. And we don't feel that same threat.
Oh, wow.
So have at it. And I thought, okay, well, then we've, you know, we wanted to make sure as much as, not that we weren't willing to fight for local control, but we wanted to know up front just where, what the challenges
right,
were.
Where there might be opposition and talk to them ahead of time.
Yes, yes.
Always a good strategy.
So that we didn't get, you know, cut off at the knees or whatever as we were about to embark on something that is, you know, it's an essential community service.
Absolutely.
And we wanted to make sure we were could be as successful as possible.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So then there was a group formed here. I know Ed was on it, and you. And who was Dan Post? Who was the third person?
Yeah, there was Dan Post, Larry Eppenbach.
Oh, yeah.
There was Ed Dolan was involved. John
mm-hmm.
Ryan was involved.
Mm-hmm.
There were lots of people. I mean, Mila Prince, you know, who's at Odlin, she and some others were involved early on. Sarah Rabel did a lot of groundwork. Ed Kilduff was on the Solid Waste Advisory Board at the time, and he was very instrumental in just laying out, I think, for not just Lopez, but in San Juan County, what was happening with solid waste.
That's great.
On a very big picture, what was going on economically, what was going on politically, what was happening on a management level.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so that was all really important to us.
And out of that, with several kind of possibilities emerging, one was finally settled on as the path.
Yeah, it took a long time to get there.
How long?
Well, probably, you know, I want to say a year and a half.
Yeah.
That original concept of separating the garbage stream, absolute garbage, from all recycling and reuse and repurposing, there's a huge flaw in that. I'm so glad we did not do it. I mean, the economics have changed a lot in the last 18 to 20 years.
Yeah.
So when that concept was first floated, it made some sense. But the markets have all changed. Transportation has changed. A lot of things have changed. I mean, if you think about it, you know, we were still hauling garbage to Orcas to be buried at that point.
Yep.
That has since been closed down.
Yep.
The Lopez site, you know, over at Port Stanley. That's been closed down. Now we transport absolute garbage off of Lopez on a over 700 mile run to Eastern Oregon. So anyway, the economics have all changed.
Absolutely.
But that was an idea that came up nonetheless, even though it's changed. It was an idea that came up again during this last phase of local control. Should the port, for instance, just take on the transportation of garbage, and should an entity like SWAP, the Solid Waste Alternatives Project, which is a nonprofit, just take on all the recycling and repurposing and reuse of Neal's Mall and all of that? But the modeling doesn't work economically.
No, that,
it's got to be a whole system.
Yeah.
But at any rate, so that was all at play. That in that year and a half, there were lots of ideas. You ask about, you know, that this final path that was settled on.
There were public meetings.
Lots of public meetings.
Yep.
You know, 200-300 people would show up at a time. There
absolutely.
Was lots of interest. Neal has done an excellent job, you know, with others of keeping our, you know, take it or leave it, solid waste recycling venture here on Lopez to be really supreme. And so over those 22 years that he's been there, he's captured a lot of people's hearts and minds just about the site itself and possibilities. So that created, I think, a groundswell of support that was already there. Is all we had to do was present an idea that seemed legitimate and that could be successful. And, you know, at first it was looking at the port of Lopez. That seemed like a really good place to do it. In the end, that was through the attorneys that was deemed to be illegal.
Yeah.
And so we couldn't do that. And it was through those negotiations between the prosecuting attorney and the port's attorney and some of us that were involved that we settled on this idea of a Lopez Solid Waste Disposal District. So we've got, you know, the managing board, which is here on Lopez, and there's five of us mm-hmm. that are on that, and then the governing board, which is really our county council. Members, the three of them serve in that role.
And as I understand it, the understanding is they need to take their county council hats off when they deal with issues around Lopez Solid Waste
yep.
management, because that they can't talk, say, from Orcas about their opinions of solid waste management. They have to be the people that helps Lopez Solid Waste Management be successful.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
That's the mandate.
So they have the, at this point in San Juan, there are four solid waste districts in mm-hmm. the state of Washington, and two of them exist in San Juan County.
Yep.
One of them is Lopez, and we're just carved out for Lopez, and the other one carves out the rest of the county.
Aha.
So those two districts and the council that we have serves as, you know, that governing board of both the Lopez Solid Waste Disposal District and the rest of the county Solid Waste Disposal District.
Interesting.
Well,
we won't get into that. Maybe I'll have Jamie on.
Yeah, no
those
need to
dynamics.
Get into that.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. those are interesting dynamics,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, but you know what? They've been fabulous
oh,
to
yeah,
work
absolutely.
With as,
yeah.
as people.
Yeah.
They have... You know, they've asked some key questions of us, but
yeah.
otherwise they have allowed us to do the management,
right.
which is what our,
right.
our job is. Yeah.
Well, I'll just kind of lay out some of the things I hope we cover here. And, of course, one of them is because I think there's this huge educational component for Lopez voters particularly, but all Lopez citizens to understand of the difference between owning our own solid waste, who has a different objective for a zero waste than other solid waste districts, and the revenue flow comes from garbage. So right away you have kind of the more successful you are, the less successful you are. But let's cover that last.
Okay.
But let's first talk about, because I've noticed it myself, and then we were talking about Sweden, who has 3% of their, they have 3% trash right now, and that trash they burn and create energy from, and they're now buying, they're not buying, they're being paid to take trash from other countries. And when I talked to you about that, Sandy, you said that, you know, it's a really interesting concept of the psychology of how we deal with our own trash. And I'd like to hear your perception and experience about that.
Well, okay, I'm just an individual,
yep,
right? So I'm not speaking on behalf of anyone.
That's good to know.
But the concept of zero waste is actually very sophisticated. It's sophisticated on many levels. It's a sophisticated psychological adaptation that we have to make. It's sophisticated in terms of a financing model. And I think it's really sophisticated for a community even to dip its toes into it, because there are policies that have to be enacted. And there's lots of follow-through from, you know, that term that they use, cradle to cradle, which has been used in manufacturing, where you take a raw material, you manufacture something, and when it's ended its useful manufacturing or its useful life for what it was manufactured for, you bring it back around and then recreate or repurpose it into something else.
Yes.
Yeah. Bill McDonough and others have been very, very instrumental in getting that terminology and some manufacturing set up in that way.
Right.
Again, it's...
It's a whole new area. I mean, people... I just really... I started out as a volunteer coordinator, just thinking of just organizing humans, but then I became really interested.
Mm-hmm.
It's like being a banker or something, a new banker. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you have to know all the markets. You have to, and then it just goes deeper and deeper
yep.
and
yep.
deeper. And we've hardly, this is the first time I've even been exposed to it. I'm almost 72 years
yeah.
old, and a consumer of products for all those mm-hmm. years, even when I wasn't doing it, my parents were, but and nobody ever mentioned this as something to understand.
No.
In my life.
No. And if you think about it, here's Lopez, and you know, okay, in Oakland they're doing this, in Boulder, Colorado they're doing this. There's places where they have zero waste programs going on, and they're supported typically through an entire infrastructure, not just their public works and solid waste divisions, but their entire political representatives are involved in it, and there's just a lot of support, and they've got larger markets and all of that.
Yeah.
For a very small place like Lopez, it doesn't even have local governance in terms of a, you know, we have a Lopez Solid Waste Disposal District, but we're really, the governing body is San Juan County Council taking off their hats and becoming our governing board.
Right.
So we've taken on something that I think is made more complex because of the very fact that we are rural. We are so small, we can't really make a difference. It's not like we have any real negotiating power.
Oh.
But that said, you know, I look at some of what has happened over the years. You know, here's Skagit Steel, where a lot of things for recycling out into mm-hmm. the market get taken, deposited, and then they're watching the markets and selling the baled goods that they get. And Neil has made such an impression on them that they will negotiate a little bit with the recyclables that end up there. If they come from Lopez, sometimes they're given a little higher price because
of the quality of
the quality of the materials.
So to speak. Yeah.
Yeah, and in general, you know, some people still don't understand rinse. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Flatten.
R-I-N-S-E.
Yeah. You know, I've talked to a couple of people about it. They're like, well, I don't know. I just don't know how to get peanut butter or cat food out of something. So a rubber spatula, for instance, is a really good household tool to have in your kitchen to help
and
do that kind of thing.
This is funny. This is the third time that I've interviewed a guest where we've had a discussion about what's the right way to get peanut butter out of a jar. And Sarah Eppenbach said, I never thought in my life that I'd be on the radio telling someone to use soap and a brush to get peanut butter out of a jar.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
here you are saying a spatula, and we're talking about these. This is just a metaphor.
Yeah.
For how deep, let's keep using that word, how deep we, every one of us need to go to be responsible participants in this goal.
Yeah. No,
that we're still talking peanut butter out of a jar, folks.
Hey, but that's what it all comes down to.
Exactly.
It's the details in life
that
really make a go of something
or
send it to a crash point where
that's
it doesn't
exactly
really
right.
work. And it's really fascinating to understand.
And let's talk about why that really matters. Because contamination, you want to talk about contamination?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, well, contamination, when we take a bale, it all gets crushed here and baled up, wired up, and taken on a truck to over to Skagit. And if there's any odor or any thing that's amiss with this bale when they put it into there, we don't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
We get paid zero, 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 folks. Do you hear that? And because of ferry fees and the price of gas and the pain, the people, it costs money to load it, unload it, bail it, all that. Every step of the way, there's dollars involved. And if we get no money back, eventually, we can't run it. So that peanut butter jar is a metaphor for, and the other part is wash out aluminum cans because our friends and neighbors are getting stung.
Mm-hmm.
Quite badly. Yellow jackets.
Yeah, they like food
so
residue.
So there's a couple of layers of reasons why paying attention to cleaning all your recyclables, or don't put them in. Pay to trash them if you need to.
Yeah. You know, and that said, really, the markets are such right now that we don't get a lot of financial gain from those things anyway. It's the right thing to do. We're all glad we're doing it. But if you look at it, you know, There's a lot of effort going into all of this, and there's not much economic return from it. The economic return is really still on garbage, and that's because we're in a global connected, even though we're Lopez, we're connected to a global marketplace. And there are subsidies that follow lines of trash and garbage. And those same subsidies don't really come into play with things like recyclables. It's just, you know, I think it's a changing world.
Yeah.
And in a few years, it could all be flipped, you know, the other way. But right now, that's what's going on.
And actually, Washington is kind of in the forefront with that, because manufacturers are now paying through Washington e-waste. You heard, I think, Larry Eppenbach talk about that, or maybe it was Paige. So they're now, we can take televisions and get paid for them to take it and recycle them in a safe and thorough way. Mm-hmm. And hopefully other markets, and we'll still pay for that. You know, we're paying a little more for our televisions now when we buy it to pay for that program.
Yeah.
But hopefully other markets like that and manufacturers will be required eventually to pay for the recycling and garbage costs.
Carol, it might be interesting, I brought this, you know, I don't know if people are that interested in it, but we are talking zero waste. But there are considered 12 master commodities comprise the entire discard supply, pretty much anywhere in the world.
Really? I have not heard this.
So they really consider 12 master categories. And it's a way to break it down and look at it in a somewhat manageable form. So if we look at that, the 12 commodities are 5% are reusable goods. So that would be things you would find at Take It or Leave It and that type of thing. Yeah. 25% of discards are paper-related in some form. About 5% are metals, 5% glass, 7% are polymers, 3% textiles, 2% chemicals, 5%, oh, this word really bothers me. Neil is very good at it, but putrescibles.
What is that?
You know, he's told me numerous times, where is Neil when we need them, when we need him? 10% is wood, 5% ceramics, 3% soils, and another 25% in plant debris. So you see 50% of all of the discards are paper and plant debris.
Wow.
In the world. And if you look at that, you know, if you don't have programs in place, a lot of that is going into this, what's considered absolute garbage, and being transported places.
Well, now, aren't those composting materials, many of them?
Yes. Yes, they are. But that's why they're saying, you know, if you look at some of the at the zero waste sites, one of the things they say is that zero waste is an urgent idea. It's one of the few paths to saving the earth for our grandchildren's grandchildren, an emerging business colossus, a vision, and a social movement. So anyway, what they're saying is, you know, be aware of that, because for communities to be involved at this level, it's highly sophisticated, it's also urgent, and it is really the right thing for us to do, even though at first glance it may not seem as though it makes a lot of economic sense. I think what we'll find in the long run is that we will be much ahead of the game. You know, one of the things that is talked about a lot when you look at zero waste is, well, as a person who shops, how do you shop so that you can create less waste? And one of those things in shopping is, well, what's going to happen when you get home, or you purchase something, or you have something mail ordered? What kind of packaging does it come with?
Yeah.
And then what are you going to do with it? And that, you know, I'm not a big shopper because I don't enjoy it very much. But I could see that if I did, I would really have to change some of my patterning. But that said, when I go places now, and if I am purchasing something, I usually tell them, well, I'm actually living on Lopez and we've got a zero waste program, so I can't take any of the packaging. I'll need to leave it all with you and just take the product. And usually people are quite fine with that. Yeah. But I think if more of us started doing that.
Yeah, it's an educational move.
It is educational, and it also, I think, eventually would get back to the manufacturers in yeah. how things were being packaged.
I agree. You know, one of the things I've found, I mean, I can't even put words on how much my consciousness has been raised. I've recycled for a really long time, as long as I could on Lopez Island, so we're pretty much all set up, but I still don't have a mixed metal place. I mean, there's a lot of things I don't have, although I do have a lid thing. And I've always thought, as I did it, well, I'm doing this, this is important, it's a social, something I need to do, but what difference does it, will this make to the planet? Where I put this piece of cardboard or what I do? And somehow being this involved in this, I really think this is maybe a baby step, maybe a middle step towards saving the planet. Hmm. I really do. I think we're in a, and the information and the initiative and the new ideas about how we can all do this more effectively and better will come, and it does come all the way back to what you buy and how you buy it and where is mm-hmm. it going. So not in my lifetime, but somehow we are changing people's ways of thinking about themselves, and it's changed my way of thinking about why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah.
To be consciously mm-hmm. aware of every single piece of why I put it where. It's changed me. I've been changed.
Well, and a lot of people, if you just have an economic lens and you look at what's happening with recycling, reusing, repurposing, and the whole waste stream, you'll say it doesn't make any difference and people are wasting their time and it has absolutely no impact, because on a global level, through an economic lens and even an environmental lens, you can say it doesn't have any impact. But I think you've touched something that is deeper than that. You can't look at these as through a stagnant lens and say, oh, at this snapshot of time, none of this is making any difference.
That's right.
Because you will conclude it doesn't, and then you will probably stop
right.
doing
and
it.
And that's an accurate observation.
Absolutely. Because it all, if you look at it through that lens,
that's
everything
right.
points to that, and you would be wrong to conclude anything else. But you, I think, hit on something, and that is it's changing you. It's opening up the way that you view things, and in doing so, you know, you're no longer in isolation from your daily actions, how you purchase, how you discard, all your decision making. And that goes beyond zero waste. It starts affecting you personally in your budget, your
yes.
household
yes.
budget, your interactions with your kids and your grandkids. Yeah. It has this ripple effect. And you could say at any given moment in time, well, anything that I'm doing as an individual doesn't really matter. But there's also a philosophy that is just as powerful that says everything that every individual does matters.
Yep.
And you never know which one of those things is going to be that tipping point,
yep.
which changes an entire population or an entire system. Because as we explore and awaken to, you know, a wider, deeper understanding of any particular subject matter we're involved in, we don't know when we will stumble upon that aha moment,
exactly.
which takes everything to a new turn.
Excellent.
I always tell people, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of economic sense right now. And I understand that and I agree with that. But who are any of us to say that things should continue the way they are? And what benefit are we getting from things continuing the way they are? And no, we don't, you know, we stumble through this. I mean, the board of the Lopez Solid Waste Disposal District, the volunteers, the employees, yep. everybody is working so hard. It's been
yep.
an incredible outpour of you know, energy into taking this
right.
on. And do we always hit it right? No. Do we hit some things right? Absolutely. And will we over time, you know, make these adjustments and create a system that I think is absolutely working? I can pretty much say, yeah, I think that we will.
Yeah, I think we will too. Yeah. I think it might take a couple years, and one of the things we have to get used to is the market fluctuations, and as shoppers and consumers of the recycling, well, not really consumers of recycling, but people who take our recycling to take it or leave it or to the recycling center up above, we have to be flexible enough to know that there are going to be times that they're not going to take things they took yesterday. And then there'll be other times, well, they'll take three things they never used to take because someone found a market.
Yep.
And they are constantly. Neil, Paige, those are the two main people, and I know there are others, are constantly seeking new markets.
Oh, yeah. So Larry, Dan, yeah, there's a lot of people out there looking, and they're constantly in touch. And, I mean, every time Dan makes a delivery, he's asking questions. Right. He wants to know about, you know, what's happening in the market, and he brings that information back to
us.
Yeah.
Dan is, you know, I can remember Dan standing up and talking and saying, I am tired of taking an empty truck off this island. He said it for years and years and years. He was the only voice in a room full of 200 people.
Yeah.
And people thought, yeah, okay, Dan. I mean, really, honestly. I mean, it wasn't like it was a good idea, but it seemed so, like, impossible, really. Like, yeah, I think that's a really good idea in a perfect world, but come on, we don't live in a perfect world. Well, now we're one step closer because Dan's going off island with a truck full of stuff.
Well, and not only that, so does Pete when he goes off. Yeah. Yeah. So
that's a long way to come in a couple of years. Because really, honestly, I remember thinking, but that's not really what we're talking about here, when in fact that was the heart of what we were talking about.
Yeah, because he had the wisdom to see that there was this essential flaw and there was a very simple remedy to it.
There was
Dan is brilliant in that way of seeing and interacting with the world. The more that I work with him, the more I realize, oh, you know, he can just cut through and find these essence points and then bring them into focus, and then we make a change from there, and it has this ripple effect wider and wider and really begins to make a difference.
And some of them are just so simple and practical and obvious.
Oh yeah.
Like that one. That one, it's easy to overlook. And you know, one of the things, going back to one of the things I always, not always, but when I'm usually at my wit's end when I was raising my kids, I always said, what if everybody in the world did exactly what you just did? What would happen? I still occasionally think that myself.
Yeah, with 7 billion people on the planet, it's a good question to ask.
It is. It's a good question to ask about a whole lot of things, about my language sometimes, about, there's so many ways, and certainly garbage is another one. We have a lot of people coming through our house, many of them interns from all over. Most of them actually have never recycled. It's a brand new idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, well, it's surprising. It's really surprising.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I'm very good at this part of it, of not being, you know, a taskmaster or anything. But when I find beer bottles in the plastics, I just mention it and remind them where the glass container is. And eventually, over 6 weeks, they actually end up complying. But it's a long learning process for people who have no exposure.
Yeah.
So, you know, be patient with yourself and your families and your friends. Just start.
Well, and don't you think, though, Carol, sometimes, you know, when I find people are just moving here and they don't understand, if they go to the site a few times, they really begin to understand why it's important to behave differently than what they thought.
Absolutely.
Because they're seeing it and experiencing it. And I think that makes a big difference.
That not only people that are moving here, because I work at Take It or Leave It, but tourists come in all the time off the street because there's a lot of cars out there and they want to know what's the action.
Yeah.
So they come up and they look around and they're amazed. And then I always ask them to go up and look at the recycling plaza, because that is really quite a sight.
Yeah.
And if you haven't been there, even if you don't have anything to recycle, you got to go down to the dump, folks, really, and bring your friends. Because everybody will feel better, and they'll know more when they leave.
Yeah.
Just by watching.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all the volunteers all have vests on. Talk to them.
Yeah. And the nice thing about it is, I mean, we're less than a year into the experiment, right? And already you know, it just seems to be there are so many more programs in place, like the e-waste program.
Yes.
Starting to have more of a relationship with having some of the clothing and textiles be able to be repurposed off of Lopez and not just depending on Lopez because they were stacking up so much there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think our big challenge, right, we've got lots of big challenges, but one of the big challenges is glass.
Yeah.
There's, you know, just acres and acres and acres of stored glass everywhere right now. I was up in Victoria, Canada, not too long ago, and I noticed that, you know, they gave a 5 cent or something per bottle refund. And so they had the bottle discard or bottle depot and when I went by there. And they have a little better closed system on what to do with glass and how to make it useful. And we don't really have that yet.
What do they do?
In the U.S. They are, you know, they have more places where they actually melt it down
and
repurpose it.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Yeah.
And whatever happened to the crushing it and using it for walkways and stuff? That's fallen.
You know, glass crushers are notorious for being, well, first of all, expensive to purchase. They're not the manufacturing of them, the quality of the machine itself is not very good. And so it's very expensive to maintain a glass crusher.
Yeah.
And the ones that have been used, they cost a lot for the initial purpose. But to maintain it also
to keep them working. So essentially they break down.
Yes. And, you know, so all of that kind of went to the wayside.
Yeah.
I know a lot of communities have tried that, including Lopez and the San Juan Islands. And it just, it doesn't
sustainable.
Work, and it's not a long-term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, gosh, with all these brilliant minds in this country, and this being a global problem, really, you'd think that there's a practical, simple solution somewhere.
You know, I'm sure there is. The local, you know, our new public works director told me he was lived in Italy for a while. So one of the things he really liked about it is that he's a wine drinker, and so he would take his wine bottle back to the marketplace, bring his own cork, and, you know, clean his bottle and refill it from a keg and then take it back home. So they had, you know, I think in other cultures, they deal with this glut of glass a little differently.
Yeah.
Because they have reuse for glass bottles.
Right.
We get to use most things one time.
That's right.
And toss it. I mean, canning jars, et cetera, we use multiple times. But think about it.
Yeah.
A lot of things you purchase in glass.
Absolutely.
It has one use, and then it is tossed again.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing we're trying to do here is develop there's some sites that need to be reclaimed because they're, you know, they're gravel pits or whatever, and to establish that relationship with somebody local so that instead of, you know, hauling.
Glass is the heaviest thing we haul. Well, maybe metals more.
No,
glass is heavier.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But anyway, to be able to, you know, instead of having a few hour trip, to have about a 5 or 7 minute trip. So you can save on fossil fuel use. You can save on time, save on ferry fare, and also help with a reclamation that's necessary anyway.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. It's just, the whole thing is so fascinating to me. Let's move into some more specifics. And these are not all isolated from each other. Every one of these topics definitely has deep connections with the other one. But the finances of zero waste are, right now, our solution has been dependent on a levy that the voters voted for last November. I think about 85% was the highest vote for a levy in San Juan County, or was it? Yeah. So what do you see as a board member? Because I know 3 o'clock, there you'll be at the fire hall at your board meeting, and you'll be talking about finances.
Yeah. Well, we talk about it pretty much every time we meet because there's you know, we're a very, very small district, but it's very complex, and there's lots of moving pieces, and we're connected with a global market. So, you know, all of those things make for complexity. But anyway, I've read a lot about different zero waste programs throughout the United States and actually in the world. I mean, you talked about Sweden having reduced their absolute garbage from, you know, 50% down to 3%. Well, they do that through tax-supported programs. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that the community says, this is an essential service. We want to pay for it. It's like the library, the fire, the school, whatever we say as a community, this is important to everyone. Yeah. And I think, you know, some people say, well, I don't ever use the transfer station on Lopez. I go elsewhere. Or I only produce one can a year. You know, I just don't, you know, they don't use very much. But if you think about it, it has a long-term effect here on Lopez. If you think about roadside litter, beach cleanup, just the way, the part of the culture here on Lopez, we're all tuned a little bit differently to what's around us.
Yes.
You know, our roadside ditches, our beaches, all of that, even noxious weeds.
Yeah,
being
exactly.
able to be deposited. So there are these, again, ripple effect benefits to having a really, really well-run local entity.
Absolutely.
Like this.
And, well, it's not been visible on Lopez because we've always had some place for some amount of money to take things like old tires and all sorts of things. And even old couches and whatever. I grew up in Montana. And still, in other places, and I can imagine it happening here, people find a place that no one's looking and they just dump it off because they don't feel like they have a choice.
Oh, yeah. I visited a friend of ours. She's got a ranch in Kansas. And her neighbor, I mean, it was not funny, but he loaded up his pickup, you know, once a week or 2 weeks, and he would drive it. It was full of black plastic bags filled with trash.
Yep.
He would drive it to the bridge, and he would dump them over one by one and
yeah.
float them down the river.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, really? She said, oh, yeah. She, for as long as she had known him, you know, 30-some years,
that's
what he did. Well, somebody downstream was either cleaning up after him or not, as the case may be.
Right.
But, you know, he's a farmer, so he dumped a lot of things into that river.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's nice to be in a community where we're saying, look, this is important. If you've got it, we will try and find a market for it. And if we can't find a market and it's absolute garbage, before it becomes absolute garbage, maybe somebody else can make use of it again.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of ways in which I think having this makes a big difference. But again, there aren't any communities that I know of that have been able, because of the economics of it, that have been able to approach zero waste or such a robust program as ours without some kind of tax support.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, as I said in the beginning, the more successful we are moving towards zero waste, the more need we have for tax support,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the reasons. I mean, we actually do have less garbage going to the landfill than we had last year.
Oh,
and
yeah.
we're hoping for less next year. I mean, because that's what it's all about. But as that happens, we have to find ways to make up that difference, because that's what pays the bills.
You know, the other day, someone approached me. He didn't say I was an idiot, but implied that there was something sort of idiotic about me. And one of his comments was, what's wrong with you? Did you not do any homework whatsoever? Why are you asking for $115,000 this year when you asked for $100,000 the first year? And how can I trust that you even, any of you, know what you're doing? And I said, well, think about it. We looked at 6 years, basically. You know, we looked at a 6-year period of time previous and looked at garbage volumes, recycling volumes, everything we could. But Lopez at that point was part of a San Juan County system, and it wasn't easy to really extract the numbers. We did the best that we could, and I think, you know, with the way that the county kept their records, they were doing the best that they could. So we took that and thought we were, you know, doing a somewhat conservative estimate of what the volumes would be. And if you look at it, the in that six-year period, about 640, 680 tons, something like that, was the high. And I think about 450 ton was the low.
Is this for a year? Or?
You know, in a six-year period.
Okay.
So, and we averaged that, and we thought, okay, so 520 ton, something around that, will probably be just about right. Well, I think this year, really, will be closer to 420 ton.
Wow. And that's good news.
Well, it's great news because our goal is zero waste.
Exactly.
So it means that people, I think, are you know, quite conscientious and doing all that they can. And as we expand programs, people are having to dump less and less because there are either different markets or it's more clear to them, you know, as they're self-separating. Oh, well, now I can get rid of this and this and this, and I don't have to fill up my my absolute garbage can with these things that could be reused or repurposed somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I mean, we started with Sandy saying it's deep and it's complex. It's not complicated. Because I have only been doing this 3 months. And, I mean, I know I have a lot to learn, but my eyes are wide open with how much more I know and understand and how it's changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to scare people. It's not complicated, but it's very complex.
Mm-hmm.
And another part of our business plan is that we have two part-time employees, and actually the recycle and take it or leave it are run by volunteers.
Yes.
That's the business plan now, and unless we come up with some additional revenue from other sources to increase the staff, which would mean more cost to taxpayers, that is where we are. And as I said, I'm the volunteer coordinator, and I sent out yesterday or the day before, it was my first May Day. We had, and in the summer, this is our first summer, folks, so we didn't know anything, mm-hmm. frankly. We were like infants who suddenly had to become adults overnight and understand that we got a problem. And the problem is that people have guests, they're on vacation, they're busy, everybody's doing the best they can. The volunteers are amazing. And yet, on Saturday, this Saturday, that's in 2 days, there was not one volunteer on a shift.
Mm.
One person signed up since then. On Sunday, there was not one volunteer on a shift for take it or leave it.
Mm.
And on Saturday, I should say, there was not one volunteer on a shift for recycle.
Wow. Well,
and
there's
this
a
is
lot
new.
Happening.
There, that's
Saturday.
What I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. There's a lot happening on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So we need some of you guy volunteers that aren't going to the trash and fashion to show up for take it or leave it.
Yeah, and that aren't going to weddings or the skate park extravaganza or anything like that.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And mm-hmm. we're just beginning to learn about that. So, I'm just calling out, it's really rewarding to become a volunteer at the dump. It's easy. You can call me at 2138. I'll email you a application, and we'll make sure your very first shift will be with a very experienced, that's how we're teaching people how this works.
Yeah. You know, Carol, I wanted to mention something about the levy.
Uh-huh.
So it is going to, the rate this year will be 11.155 cents per $1,000 of valuation. So the way that translates is a $300,000 property, you would be asked to pay $33.47 per year.
Yeah. How does that relate to what the levy asked for last year? Do you have that figure?
Oh, I think it was around $28.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's like,
it's
less than around $5 or less a year more.
Well, it depends on your property valuation.
No, you're right, exactly.
Yeah, because last year was a little over 9 cents. So it's about it's a little over a penny raise this year per thousand.
Per thousand.
Yeah. And yeah. We've got that all on the website. Yeah. So we're asking for a little over a penny per $1,000 in valuation this year. Yeah, somebody came up and said, you know, I've got a $2.5 million property, and I understand you are planning on raising the levy, and we figured it out, you know, what it would cost him, which was less than $300 a year, which was helpful for him to understand that, mm-hmm. because I think it sounds like a lot until you actually do the math, and then understand that really for what we're getting, it's really not. It's a monumental task that Lopez has taken on. Communities just don't do this, and we ask for it.
Yep.
We begged for it, and now we are successfully doing it.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it really is.
I think
something.
It's astonishing.
It is astonishing.
We will. We are a model for every single mm-hmm. person that comes in and takes it back to their place. I mean, we're the catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
The petri dish, will you, for this to spread.
Yeah, because if you think about it, most people say this cannot, it's almost impossible to do, even if you're in a large urban area with lots of support and financial and lots of access to markets, and you're not, you know, having ferries to contend with and all of that.
Right.
So even under the best of circumstances, it's difficult.
It is. The one thing we do have going, though, is community.
Yes.
Because we have a defined local community that understands and takes on responsibilities that are not yet neighbor. I mean, it needs to be almost broken down into neighborhoods, large mm-hmm. neighborhoods, and mm-hmm. some entities where the scale is such that people share collectively responsibilities for what happens in their community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm talking everything. I mean, we have a co-op power, Opalco.
Mm-hmm.
We have the community land trust. We have a children's center. We have a library. Mm-hmm. All of that. None of that. We have a community center. We have a school.
Well, think about
it. There's only 2,500 of us.
Paramedics and EMTs and fire here.
I know.
We just have some extraordinary.
Exactly.
Resources.
Absolutely.
Here. We have community radio, for goodness sakes.
Here we are.
Yeah.
And some of our high school kids are some of the volunteer firefighters. I mean, it all crosses lines.
Mm-hmm.
And other communities, even larger metropolitan areas, need to break down their communities or find ways that people can become engaged in these essential activities
mm-hmm.
that catch fire the way it has for the local residents here.
Yeah.
Not everyone, but if it's you, come and join us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, it's terrific.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about what's happening Sunday?
Yeah. So this is the second annual Trash and Fashion Show. The SWAP, the Solid Waste Alternatives Project, that's Glenn and Kate and Sarah are the board members there. And they've got a team, I don't know, they must have 20 or 30 people helping them pull it all off. But it is an extraordinary event. You can get tickets for sale at Paper Scissors and some of the other places in
Lopez. What time is
Lopez.
It? I forget.
It's at 4, starts at 4:30.
Oh, good. It's late afternoon.
Yeah, and it's on Sunday. Yeah, so you can still work a shift
at the dump
or take it or leave it or the recycling plaza.
Yep, and get down there.
And still get there. Anyway, it promises to be lots and lots of fun and so creative.
Yeah. And buy your tickets soon. It's a donation, but the recommended donation is $15. And I should have called. I wish I would have thought of it. Buy your tickets soon. They will be sold out. The community center does have limited seating, and we can't exceed it.
Yeah.
So please buy your tickets.
But they do have a few tickets left right now.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah.
You know
so
that.
So if you go, today, you'd probably
you're good. You're
good. Be good.
Don't wait till Saturday. Don't wait till tomorrow even.
Yeah.
Get your tickets.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be great.
Well, we have a few minutes left. What would you say we haven't covered? That's
Well, let's see. What haven't we covered? Well, there's can crushers available.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
They sold out within the first couple of hours, yep. But if you call Larry Eppenbach or get on the Lopez Solid Waste Disposal District website, you can see that there's a posting there, and you can send a message that way. Uh-huh. So for those of you who need a little extra help, you know, crushing your cans after you clean and rinse them really well, that would be fantastic. What else? I think that Lopez is a part of a highly sophisticated and motivated not just U.S. movement, but global movement. We are fortunate to have the people that we have involved. I mean, yeah. Everyone from you, all the volunteers. I mean, yeah. There must be 75 people that go there. Some make a point of going every week. Others just show up once.
Yep, that's
we
true.
Have, you know, extraordinary staff.
Well, not about the board. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and the board. I'm shocked at how difficult everything can be sometimes and how demanding it can be, yep. And yet how everyone just puts their best self forward, yep. And makes it go. We have developed quite a tapestry of human resources in order to pull this off. And it just simply wouldn't happen without the greater community of Lopez, yep. Saying, we've identified this as important, and we want to support it. Yeah. And people have just such fun, creative,
yes.
Energy to put forward, and they're also just such tenacity against great odds to keep making it happen.
It's true. It's true. Well, Sandy herself is the executive director of the Lopez Community Land Trust, which I know anyone who lives here is aware of the housing. Go to their website if you want to know about another really innovative project. She has a full-time job as that director. And one of the things, I worked almost 25 years as a social worker for Catholic Community Services. I had a wonderful career, and I worked with amazing people. And when I retired and was able to volunteer in Lopez, I was so filled with gratitude. Mm. That same quality of collegial, mm-hmm. I mean, I work with Paige Reed, who's an engineer, Larry Eppenbach, who's a treasurer professionally. And
for the state of Alaska.
For the state of Alaska, yeah. He's got a great story, by the way. If you didn't hear it, it's archived. I didn't understand. He was treasurer of Alaska when he was like 28 or something. It's a great story. I encourage you to listen. Working with Sandy and working with Dan Post, who's, as we've spoken, just this innovative voice that stands up for what his ideas and his vision and what he thinks is right. And it's just amazing to work with colleagues like this. I won't even go into all the other volunteers who are also leading amazing lives.
Yeah, and Bruce Krepps on
yes.
the
oh,
board.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that. Bruce Krepps.
So masterful in
absolutely.
Everything he approaches.
Absolutely. And just join this team. They are not just the board, but the whole volunteer system. There's a lot of ways to participate. You can work at Recycle. You can work at Take It or Leave It. There's other work that needs to be done. SWAP needs the Solid Waste Alternative Program projects. That's Sarah Eppenbach. Go to the website. Check it out. Find a place that fits for you. And please join us. This is a satisfying and innovative, and what's the other word for the global part of it, that it has such deep satisfaction to be making a difference in a larger scale. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's language for that it's not in my brain right now. Well, Sandy, it's been lovely having you as a guest this morning.
It's been great.
I really enjoy talking with you. And I forgot to mention that we once again, this would not have gotten recorded if Alexander Feinstein wouldn't have been here, because I remembered about a third of the way through that I forgot to push the button because I forgot he was behind me. And thanks to Alexander, you're going to hear this.
Oh, that is great.
And he's doing the music, and he's here visiting his at staying at his grandparents' house, and Kim DeBoer was his grandfather was essential at starting and supporting actually both community radio and the community land trust. He's been was a very active, essential member of both of those organizations.
Yep.
So we're so grateful to have Alexander here with us.
Mm-hmm. And we miss Cam.
And we do miss Cam. We do miss Cam. I'm going to say good day now, do a station ID, and turn on a little music. And this is, we've been talking trash here today with Sandy Bishop and Carol Steckler. And this is KLOILP, Lopez Island, Washington, 102.9 FM.